got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that loves undivided.
Welcome back. I really think that's top of the second hour before I jump in, top of the second hour of today's broadcast, this Friday, February 11th, 2022. I really appreciate Thomas Sowell. I think that montage is brilliant. In fact, I don't know, do these things escape people when they listen? Are we listening with an attentive ear and hearing what he's saying? You know, I think Trevor Noah's analogy of the golf handicap is ironic, because with most people, the golf handicap is something that people fudge on and they lie about in the opposite fashion of the analogy that Trevor Noah uses. That is so ironic, the irony of the reality of the golf analogy. You know, it's like a golf handicap. You know, some of us need more help to, you know, compete with others. But what do people do? The truth of these kinds of social programs is evidenced in how people actually behave with regard to a golf handicap. Everyone lies about their golf handicap. Nobody wants a higher handicap. Everybody says they are a lower handicap, which is very ironic considering Trevor Noah's analogy of the golf handicap. Most people want to think of themselves as more capable on the golf course than their handicap, their true handicap, would actually indicate. And so that's the opposite of what Trevor Noah is trying to illustrate. I think that's a curious and provocative irony. So he says, you know, there are various laws and policies that benefit one group at the expense of another, but I think affirmative action has the distinction of being one that harms everybody, though in different ways. And he talks about this clash of civilizations idea, he knows, and these groups, and you're powerless unless you're part of a group, and they might go to politics. The way that he's talking about all of that, that falls right in line with what the folks, you know, the Lucius Trust published, the work of the hierarchy, the plan of the hierarchy, falls in, right in line with that. Driving people into this politics and heightened awareness of things and raising levels of consciousness and, so to speak, all of that falls right in line with that effort. How ironic. This is being used to shape people's perception, information about information. And it's not that we're saying that you're inferior or anyone's bad or anything like that. No, of course not. But you're shaping the way people think about certain subjects and about certain people and one another and so forth. And that has an impact, like Thomas Sowell says. So bigger than Aber, real quick. It's ironic. Balkanization used to include the Wikipedia entry, that is, for the term balkanization. Which is an interesting term. The term coined in the early 19th century, now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople, refers to the division of the Balkan Peninsula, which was ruled almost entirely by the Ottoman Empire, into a number of smaller states. Why? Well, because they're easier to control and manipulate and, you know, so on and so on and so on. A number of smaller states between 1817 and 1912. Well, how was it accomplished? Well, through intrigue and by proxy. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It came into common use in the immediate aftermath of the First World War, with reference to the many new states that arose from the collapse of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and the Ottoman Empire. Now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. So that's Balkanization, and there used to be a reference to beggar thy neighbor. There isn't anymore, and it's interesting because this isn't just geopolitical, it's not just economic, but you know, this is what you do. Well, like it says in the Wikipedia entry, an economics of beggar thy neighbor policy is an economic policy through which, or maybe it's academic, as Thomas Sowell is talking about at Cornell. Economic policy through which one country or one, you know, et cetera, et cetera, attempts to remedy its economic problems by means that tend to worsen the economic problems for other countries, of other countries. And that's not quite clear. Again, in simple terms, beggar thy neighbor means that you are trying to benefit a small minority at the expense of the majority, or vice versa. Maybe you're penalizing the majority because of the sins of the lone wolf or the minority. And so we've seen both of those in America, and what that does is that creates bitter rivalries in people where they would not otherwise exist. And so it's interesting. And there's more just in that little 13 or 14 minute montage with Thomas Sowell with Peter Robinson versus Trevor Noah. Interesting stuff. Let's go to the phones. Rhonda in Missouri, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. You were talking about something, and I was thinking about, that's interesting, because, like, you were talking about how when someone's diagnosed with an illness, and then you always talk, you know, going back before, at least my perception is two different realities, right? And I wonder, I always wonder, like, you know, with all of this influence, which I know which reality the Lord would probably want us to have, but it's interesting how, like, when my brother was diagnosed with cancer, and same story, like you're talking about three months to live, go get your affairs in order, right?
Yeah.
Well, he can never quite return to our reality, if you know what I mean. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you know, I, without being, without oversimplifying or, I don't know, sounding crass, which I don't intend to, I think there is, you know, perhaps an argument to be made that we should, maybe the rest of us should be drifting more in the direction of where his mindset is at. And,
exactly. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
He can't, you know, he's always, not that he wasn't a Christian before, but now he's closer to God than ever, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
he's probably actually living it in ways, practical, daily, moment-by-moment ways that escape most of us when we don't have that, you know.
Yeah, it's deeper somehow.
Uh-huh.
Very introspective.
Yeah.
You know, he's my go-to guy for questions a lot of times, you know.
Yeah.
And because, you know, everybody around here is like, well, that's a weird thought. But I do. I think outside the box. And when he was diagnosed. Say what?
Just kidding.
Oh.
I said, what box?
I'll go back and listen to what you said.
I said, what box? Just kidding. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I almost like, I mean, when he got the diagnosis, I mean, it changes everybody's reality around you. You know, you're like, I remember asking him, like, what is your mind? What are you thinking right now? I mean, you know, obviously we all want you to make it. And the doctor just said you have 3 months. So you go, mm-hmm. I did. I wanted to get into his mindset. Like, are you, like, you know, obviously he was, you know, getting close to the Lord. He wasn't obviously feeling well, so he had some a lot of downtime. But it's like you wouldn't ever want anybody to go through that. But in the same way, when someone survives it, you're like, it's like golden, you know, it's like amazing, you know, it's a miracle. And
it's as though, you know, they go through the suffering and kind of like what I was talking about with some Hollywood types, not to marginalize something. I don't mean to do that at all, but, you know, it's a similar experience for people in different, you know, different circumstances. And I think I've heard that before somewhere, something like, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. So what happens? It's exactly what James says, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. You see these people go through these things, and I'll bet your brother probably sort of represents that sort of idea where he, not that he was imperfect or whatever before, but he comes through it and he just seems solid.
Yeah, his priorities definitely changed, and his mm-hmm. mindset.
Yeah.
He used to be more thinking about things of this world. And like I said, he was a Christian before, but boy, did that strengthen his relationship with God. And, mm-hmm. you know, you never want, like I said, anybody to go through that. And, you know, I certainly, of course, it says in the Bible that he won't give you more than you can handle, right? So
I would dispute that. I think it's more like he won't give you more than he can handle, or he won't allow you to experience more than he can handle. I think that's the appropriate.
Well, I mean, some people in certain cases, though, would probably try to off themselves depending on their mindset. Like if they knew the Lord before it happened, or maybe they get close. It's all, you know, we are a product of our experiences, are we not? You know, meaning the way that we think about certain things is, you know, probably starts early on at a young age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you're raised in a certain kind of house compared to somebody else, obviously it's going to be different. You know,
environmental determinism, genetic determinism, psychic mm-hmm. determinism. I talked about a lot of that stuff recently. Maybe I'll come back to that in a moment.
So here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you experience that? Because I saw it firsthand. And it's difficult without that, you know, tragedy, you know what I mean? Because it's so easy, isn't it, in my opinion, there's two realities. So there's the one that God wants you to have, but then we do live on earth, and then there's this one that, you know, you have to deal with because you're down here on earth with everyday trials, whatever, you know, and, you know, you might want your mind to go more towards the godly and less towards the physical plane. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure I'm following you. Can you restate that, please?
Well, yeah. So he went through an experience that he, you know, it was devastating when he was going through it, but he made it. And as such, I consider him very fortunate, not that he doesn't have any lasting effects, because he does, but
mm-hmm.
he did get diagnosis recently that he's 100% cancer-free for, I forget, that milestone or whatever. But, you know, it's interesting, because, I mean, as long as you know, once people have that, they can't forget that they had it. So mm-hmm. he is a changed man, but how does one, you know, it's more difficult for people who have never had any real problems. Well, I'll give you an example. Okay, so, like, everybody's had a loved one die, right? And that's kind of the moment. It's not happening to you personally, but it's happening to someone you know. And it's still, you know, it's you going through it with them. and then you feel it, but then you somehow get back to a new normal without that person in your life. But it's not necessarily any better than what it was before.
The material facts haven't changed per se. Maybe not in all cases. I mean, obviously you've lost someone, so that's changed. But other than that, which sounds trite, which I don't mean it to sound, but yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so it's like, and then it kind of, it's like God is jolting you out of your comfort zone or your day-to-day routine life and saying, hey, you know, there's a different focus that you could and should probably be focusing on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And then living in this world day-to-day, you know, you really have to be regimented in your thought processes.
Yep.
Does that make sense? Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't know. It's because it doesn't happen to you directly, and because of all the influences like you've been talking about throughout the week, I think. It's a battle. It is a battle to do that.
And it always has been, I think, but much more so now because of primarily because of the use of mass media and, you know, the weaponization of mass media to get people feeling generally upset, unhappy, et cetera, when, you know, the Bible is replete with admonitions to the contrary.
Yeah,
and there are examples of what you're talking about. Many, many examples. You know, one of my favorites in this context is Paul, you know, his thorn in the flesh, which might be a simpler example of what we're talking about, you know. And he says, you know, he implored the Lord three times that it might leave him, this thorn in the flesh. And God said to him, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. And so then he says, gratefully, therefore I will boast in my weakness, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore I am well content. Yeah, he says, I'm well content with weaknesses.
Yeah, he had built some cabins down in southern Missouri, and he recently posted a video, you know, to... I guess you could call it advertising, but it's just very introspective. And maybe because I know him, right? Because I grew up with him. But very heartfelt and... I mean, it's almost hard to remember the person before cancer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so it was just very, you know, he did it because he wanted to help. He loves fishing, and he wants to help families make good memories, because he had some with my grandpa, and he really enjoyed it. So he's, you know, when William was dying, and I said, call my brother, and I think he did, but I said, you know, he's living his dream, and I know William was way older than my brother, well, not way older, but he, people, I think, in that case, they want hope, you know, and dreams, and I don't know if William had, I know I'd heard that he'd already decided he'd lived a full life, and he was ready to go. Not that we can all decide when we go, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just very interesting. It was mostly the mind, how it works, and how something will have to snap you back into the real reality.
Exactly.
Reality.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, I hear your break coming up, so I will let you go. Have a good weekend,
you.
Okay?
All right. Thanks, Rhonda. You too. Appreciate the call. Bye. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back. All right. got a couple of things I want to share with you. How about this? First, a comment from the video. I guess before I start, you know, it's interesting. Again, speaking of the irony of all of this, it's not the biggest victims we celebrate in life. You know, there's the expression, there's nothing more powerful in the world than a victim. However, you know, again, you got all of these dichotomies, these double binds, if you will, that I would say are schizophrenia inducing. If nothing else, they cause analysis paralysis and therefore prevent a person from truly living their best life, not to, you know, borrow from what's his name. But, you know, then we have these moments of, you know, and sometimes some cases it's extreme hardship or whatever, intense suffering, whatever, where we just crash through those things in a moment. We have that aha like Rhonda was talking about. And sometimes it takes that. And so if that happens as a result of these things, is it really bad? Well, more on that in a second. First, this comment, which I think is interesting, from the video clip that we played, Thomas Sowell versus Trevor Noah on slavery and reparations. And there are some interesting links. We'll play one of them, actually. Fact check Thomas Sowell on banks and lending, because, you know, Trevor Noah mentioned that, and I didn't want to say anything, but this person who put the video together did, which is fantastic. A couple of links. So one of them is Thomas Sowell's 2010 article, Race and Politics, Part 2. And the other is the Daily News 2008 article, Thomas Sowell, Don't Blame the Lenders. Speaking of fact-checking, again, Thomas Sowell's practical wisdom is undeniable. So Miss Freethinker commented to the video. I'll read her comment entirely, in its entirety, with a couple of, you know, I'll leave the colorful expletives out and I'll swap those for the sake of radio. Being a 30-year-old black lesbian, I grew up in the mindset of Trevor. There was really no reason for me to think differently because this perspective was all around me. But as I grew older, and again, it's interesting because, you know, Thomas Sowell says, graduating college in the 50s, we didn't hear this kind of stuff. But if you listen to the media now, they will tell you, oh no, Thomas Sowell, you're confused. I'm sorry, Dave. You know, that's not accurate history. But Thomas Sowell lived it. So, yeah. So she writes, but as I grew older, Thomas Sowell's perspective started to stand out to me. Because after I started to raise out of poverty, I realized the same conversation about the man, quote unquote, holding me down didn't feel like it applied. Isn't that interesting? And so, you know, as I read this and think about this, again, you think of the dichotomy of the person who has been groomed to believe this about themselves, and the ruling class gets the opposite message, as folks like Bertrand Russell tell us. You know, they get told that they're fantastic, they can accomplish anything, et cetera, et cetera, which is similar to what John Taylor Gatto tells us about how you prepare children and you can turn any class of students into rocket scientists or dropouts. So anyway, it's interesting the dichotomy that's created when a person is groomed to feel this way and at the same time knows somewhere inherently inside themselves that they haven't done all they could do to, you know, it's not like they've done everything that they could possibly think of, and then they come to this discussion of someone or other is holding me down. It's that mindset first, and then it creates internal conflict when you know inside yourself you haven't done everything, in some cases haven't done anything, to prove the contrary. Kind of like the example of the young man who wanted to be a pilot that Thomas Sowell mentioned. So continuing, she writes, if I kept the mentality like my friends and family, then I would not be where I am. because like Thomas Sowell explains, it does create hopelessness when all you hear around you is that people that look like you is that white people are holding us back, quote unquote. But I can't because I'm black, quote unquote. The man, quote unquote. The white man won't let us prosper, quote unquote. Like, what do you think that does to a child's ambition, she says. That deteriorates every bit of hope that they can make it despite the past. And again, it's, you know, Orwell, who controls the present, controls the past, who controls the past, controls the future. Today, I sit on a sales team being the only black person in my entire office and the only black woman. And I look around and wonder why there are not more people that look like me there and think of this. And then she writes, do I believe we should receive the reparations that was promised in the first place to descendants of slaves? Yes. Do I think that would solve all our problems? No. We can have that land and property, but what good would it be if it is given to the black people that are not financially educated? It sounds like Robert Kiyosaki is talking or something. The root is doing something on your own and not waiting for that, but also acknowledging that the past is messed up and it absolutely has affected how we live now. But let's be honest about the past, shall we? More on that in a minute. All in all, she writes, I think we should acknowledge the past, and again, which past, I ask, and create solutions that are rooted in educating the black community so that we can actually catch up and rise on the economic ladder. And it's ironic, perhaps, that she misappropriated ladder, as in not the former but the latter, and I don't think that's the ladder that she meant. But in any case, I think it's a provocative observation that she makes, and I think she's on the right track, which is encouraging, I think. So a couple of things I want to share. First, speaking of the Thomas Sowell video, Rhonda's comments, and all of this stuff, and the mindset, the way that we're propagandized to think about things, which shapes our behavior and our action, as Bernays would say. The PragerU video is one of the things linked in the video that we played earlier. PragerU video, the key to unhappiness. What is the key to happiness? What is the key to unhappiness, as, you know, in the context of the video? Well, here it is. Go ahead, please.
How many times have you heard someone say they want to make a better world? It is a noble sentiment, but very hard to achieve, right? Well, actually, it's quite easy. All we have to do is increase just one human trait. This trait is so powerful that it alone can make people happier without working on their happiness and make them better. And by better, I mean more generous, more honest, more kind, more everything good, without a single lesson in morality. So then, what is this one almost magical thing? Drumroll, please. It's gratitude. You can't be a happy person if you aren't grateful, and you can't be a good person if you aren't grateful. Almost everything good flows from gratitude, and almost everything bad flows from ingratitude. Let's begin with ingratitude. Here's a rule of life. Ingratitude guarantees unhappiness. It is as simple as that. There isn't an ungrateful happy person on earth. And there isn't an ungrateful good person on earth. There are two reasons. Reason one is victimhood. Ingratitude always leads to or comes from victimhood. Ungrateful people, by definition, think of themselves as victims. And perceiving oneself as a victim or perceiving oneself as a member of a victim group may be the single biggest reason people hurt other people, from hurtful comments to mass murder. People who think of themselves as victims tend to believe that because they've been hurt by others, they can hurt others. And the second reason ungrateful people aren't good people is that ingratitude is always accompanied by anger. The ungrateful are angry. And angry people lash out at others. If ingratitude makes people unhappy and mean, then gratitude must make people happy and kind. And so it does. Think of the times you have felt most grateful. Were they not always accompanied by a feeling of happiness? Weren't they also accompanied by a desire to be kinder to other people? The answer, of course, is yes. Grateful people aren't angry, and they don't see themselves as victims. The problem, however, and it's a big one, is that in America and much of the rest of the world, people are becoming less grateful. Why? Because people are constantly told that they are entitled to things they haven't earned, what are known as benefits or entitlements. And the more things that people think they should get, the less grateful they will be for whatever they do get, and the more angry and therefore unhappy they will be when they don't get them. Here are two rules of life. Rule number one, the less you feel entitled to, the more gratitude you will feel for whatever you get, and the happier you will be. Rule number two, the more you feel entitled to, the less happy you will be. That's why, for example, children who get whatever they want are usually less happy children. We have a word for such children, spoiled. And no one thinks of a spoiled child as a happy child, and certainly not a kind one. The more that you feel that life or society owes you, the angrier you will get, the less happy you will be. As a result, we are increasing the number of angry, unhappy, and selfish people. The other way we are making people unhappy, and even meaner, is by cultivating a sense of victimhood. People are constantly told that they are victims because of their upbringing, because of past prejudice against their group, because of material inequality, because they are female, and for many other reasons. Next time you want to assess any social policy, ask this question first. Will this policy increase or decrease gratitude among people? You will then know whether it is something that will bring more goodness and happiness to the world or less. If I were granted one wish, it would be that all people be grateful. Gratitude is the source of happiness and the source of goodness. And the more good people and the more happy people there are walking around, the happier and better our world will be. If you have a way of achieving such a world without increasing gratitude, let me know what it is. I'm Dennis Prager.
Hey, hope you enjoyed
there
the video.
You go. I think that's pretty darn good. Pretty darn good advice. Last thing I'll say about this stuff, speaking of all of this, you know, again, this is evidence of the dichotomy that causes internal conflict. We don't celebrate, you know, even though, again, you know, there's the expression, there's nothing more powerful than a victim, nothing more powerful in this world than a victim. We don't celebrate the biggest victims historically. We don't celebrate victims at all. We don't celebrate those who had the greatest handicaps in the context that Trevor Noah was talking about. Hey, look how well I did. I only needed 30 handicaps. Well, look how well I did. I only needed 45, a handicap of 45, basically. We don't celebrate that. Historically, we celebrate the overcomers, who ironically are typically the most grateful and well-balanced people, as Dennis Prager pointed out. I want to give you a little bit of this. First, we'll do this, and then we'll go to the phones. I've been wanting to do this for a while. Speaking of Black History Month, there is the documentary, Black History Lost, Stolen, or Strayed. And speaking of the manipulation of perception and so forth, the cause, Bill Cosby has, you know, like Eddie Murphy said, I think it was Eddie Murphy who said, if you would have told me 20 years ago that today, you know, Bill Cosby would be in the situation he's in and Eddie Murphy would be America's dad, he would have said you're crazy. And but that's the power of the media. And people will say, well, he did these things. I don't know that to be a fact. You don't know that to be a fact. Yeah, but the jury, I understand. I'm not trying to sympathize or condone or anything like that. I'm just saying that we have been led to believe a number of things that we know are patently false. Look at September 11, 2001, for example. Look at all of the false flag events that have been used to manipulate mass perception to get us into a state of war. And yet these lies of history that have been proven false persist and are still taught in history books today in schools across the country. So that's what I'm saying. Anyway, before we go back to the phones, I want you to hear a little bit of this, Black History Lost, Stolen, or Strayed. Speaking of history and telling the truth about history, this is The Cause from 1968. Go ahead, please.
Of black... Black history. Lost, stolen, or strayed.
Never fit in that. Never get in that at all. This is more like it. Now, what's the whitest thing you know?
White Jello pudding.
No, oh, whiter sorry. Than the whites of your eyes. Sugar. Non-integrated, non-black, sweet sugar. But you see, there is a black man in your sugar. His name is Norbert Rillier. Norbert Rillier in 1846 invented a vacuum pan that revolutionized the sugar refining industry. Now, you have to dig to find that fact. I mean, it's not much history, but it's still history. Now, what do you stand in? In your shoes. Now, there's just you and your shoes, isn't it? Nope. See, there's a black man standing in your Oxfords with you. Sharing your soul and your heel is a man, his name is Jan Ernst Metzeliger. And in 1863, this is a drawing by the kids, Metzeliger invented the machine that made mass-produced shoes possible. Now, you have to dig around for that fact, too. And again, it's not much history, but it's history. Am I coming in clear to California? I mean, is this TV signal driving through a pass in the Sierra Nevada mountains and slipping into San Francisco? Okay, well, I want to thank you. Jim Beckworth, out of St. Louis, hunter, trapper, and honorary chief of the Crow Tribe of Indians. We had trouble finding you, Jim. Though you helped open the West, you didn't make the books. Chicago, right here, where the Wrigley building is. Young fellow by the name of Jean-Baptiste de Sade. Jean-Baptiste, he founded you, Chicago, when he traded with the Indians. And of course, there it is right there at that particular time. It was called Eschicago, or Stinking Onion, by the Indians. And de Sade, he didn't even change the name at all. Now you take the Lewis and Clark expedition here, right in there. You'll find a black man named York, helping to open the West. Those men are trying to wash the black out of York. That's what you might call historically significant, because a lot of people think we ought to wash white, but we ain't gonna, you see. Texas. Coming to you, Texas, right down the Chisholm Trail, right here. Right down there with 5,000 black cowboys who never made it to the Hollywood West. Did you know that, huh? In this same group, there was one black outlaw. His name was Deadwood Dick, who claimed his soul brothers were Bat Masterson Billy the Kid and Jesse James. Deadwood Dick used to ride into the saloon, order two drinks, one for himself and one for his horse. And here's his horse drinking a shot of red eye with a straw. And how about the 186,000 blacks who fought on the Union side during the Civil War? 38,000 died. How about Teddy Roosevelt's charge up San Juan Hill? It wasn't just the Rough Riders who made it. Four black regiments went right up with Teddy. They didn't get lost going up the hill. They got lost in the history books. How about the North Pole? Snow White? Well, the first man there was black, Matthew Henson. He spoke Eskimo. And he was Admiral Perry's navigator. And although he made it first to the pole, it never quite made it to the history books. And how about your heart? Can we get there? All right. Daniel Hale Williams first performed open heart surgery successfully. Now, this list could go on forever. Blacks who made it, blacks who made history, but who didn't get into the history text at all. And the strange thing is how little there is about us in the textbooks. Napoleon once said, history is a fable agreed upon, and the fable agreed upon up to now is that American history is white on white. But sometimes we did get into the history books. All wrong. Now you take this one. The Growth of the American Republic, 1942 edition. Samuel Eliot Morrison, Henry Steele Cummager. Quote, as for. This has to do with slavery. As for Sambo, Professor Morrison. Sambo, Professor Cummager. As for Sambo, whose wrongs moved the abolitionists
we'll
to wrath and tears.
Leave it there in the interest of time. Anyway, if you're not familiar with Black History, Lost, Stolen, or Strayed, it's fascinating. I've always appreciated Bill Cosby. The controversy aside, and I think that he has tried to do some really amazing things. I think, you know, 1968, fast forward to 2008, State of the Black Union, Bill Cosby, Dick Gregory, and, you know, some other folks. Might not, I don't know, whatever. And Tavis Smiley and some other folks. And now, you know, what happened? It's interesting. So, to the phones. Back to the phones. Ruth in Canada, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Of history, work with children and education, and just wanted to set the record straight. I heard on a talk show this morning from a man I highly respect, so I'm going to talk to him about it before I mention his name. But I wanted to set the record straight about the trucker convoy, Freedom Convoy 2022 here in Canada. It is totally peaceful. Any information that you have heard that it is not is misinformation. Anyone in their midst who seems to or has a tendency or talks about doing anything violent is immediately confronted and removed from them. And including, you know, the swastika flag was probably paid for by Soros. That was a photo op in front of a ritzy $800 a night hotel, and nobody could find it after that. So the CBC just happened to be there to take the picture. And all the other lies that they're telling are not true. The only Antifa Black Lives Matter person, who probably was paid for by Soros, drove his Jeep through a crowd of peaceful protesters, I think it was in Montreal, sent three of them to the hospital, and I hope and pray that they recover. There has been a lot of misinformation. So these men are determined, like our founding forefathers, who gave their lives and their livelihoods and laid it all on the line. They're willing to do that, to do what Gandhi did, Martin Luther King Jr. did, to do this peacefully. And they are, in fact, a teenager got on top of a war monument. They immediately told her to get down, and they're guarding it every night. They bought 100 shovels and some sand, and they're shoveling and sanding the sidewalks. They have nightly garbage crews that pick up the garbage and put the bags on the trucks. They are so good at protecting and being peaceful that people are coming out and feeding them. They're housing them. They're supporting them. and they're telling them that crime has never before been eradicated in Ottawa like it is. So I just want us to know the truth. If you hear another story, it's misinformation, and this cannot go down in the history books malformed or misinformed. We know what happened with Louis Riel and the Métis who stood against the government and were slaughtered way back at the early founding of our country. We know about the residential schools and the children that were taken. Now we're finding mass graves and generations of abuse and the fallout from being separated. Apparently the police or Trudeau is threatening to take away the children. There's 25% families there in those truckers. They are determined to be peaceful and nonviolent, and yet the Ottawa is taking, confiscating their fuel when they can. So please,
we're headed into a break.
Pray for them, support them at Give, Send, Go, Adopt a Trucker, and Freedom Convoy 2022, and pray for Canada as we pray for America up here. God bless you, and thank you for letting me speak.
Thanks, Ruth. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is really is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
We know of an ancient radiation that haunts dismembered constellations, a faintly glimmering radio station.
Welcome back. Final segment this Friday, beware the COINTELPRO styled provocateurs in our midst. Always know they're lurking. And the, beware their mantra that the best way to control the opposition is to lead it. If we all knew and we all operated on that knowledge, it would be, you know, those things would happen differently. And if we don't, then we're like little children awed by card tricks, stupid parlor tricks. And once you know how the card trick works and that these dirty dealers deal from the bottom of the deck, then you don't, you're not impressed anymore. In fact, quite the opposite. Back to the phones. Fred in Michigan, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Engineering consent by propaganda that applies with that Canadian woman's presentation when she mentioned misinformation. I say it's disinformation. Deliberately constructed propaganda to engineer public consent for the official Talmudic Kabbalah Frankenswine slime narrative. And by the way, for that woman in Canada who called, you, Dennis Prager, he's a polarizing paradox. A polarizing paradox. I used to monitor his broadcast on 50,000 watt AM locally here. And innumerable occasions, he would cite people such as Ernst Zundel and Ursula Haverbeck. Quote, scum of the earth, Holocaust deniers, scum of the earth, Holocaust deniers should be in prison if they're not dead already. Life sentences. Dennis Prager, Prager University. So when I attempted to call in, somehow I was never able to get through to present my 50 cents worth.
Yeah, speaking of 50 cents, we're short on time. We're bumping up against the end of it here. So yeah, it's interesting. Who knows why that is, but what he said there in the clip that we played, he does say some interesting things. So yes, provocative paradox, I agree. And aren't we all in some sense or another? Who knows? Maybe his discretion has been enlightened. Don't know. But it is curious, definitely.
Well, Chris, when you have time, check out the Ernst Zundel's presentation, The True History of German-Jewish Relations. He presents the scholarship of prominent Jewish people like Edwin Black, the transfer agreement, whereby thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of German Jews were relocated to Palestine.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm familiar. And yeah, I wouldn't say the same about Ernst Zundel. I would not make that statement. I would say I appreciated his research. That'll do it for today's broadcast. Thanks, Fred. Folks, I hope you have a great weekend. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.